It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
Well, it's our 21st episode, so let's all have a drink. How you doing, Will?
Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits.
But how do you really feel?
Let me tell you what. I had to get that out of my system, because last week on the podcast, I famously, didn't swear at all.
You swore once.
As a tribute to my aunt.
She's not dead.
Well, and lots happened from... No. And I got a lot of blowback for this, for not cursing. Some pod aides, some super fans of the show, were like, don't ever fucking do that again. You stunk. You were no good. You need to curse. Cursing is a part of the show.
You know who didn't say that? Andrea Marchand.
She did not. She did, I think.
She did?
I don't know. She's so pure. And then she's telling me to curse. Fuck you, Andrea Marchand. Yeah, so no. So I figured I'd start with a vengeance.
And here we are. Now you got your vengeance out?
Well,
for starters.
For starters, we'll get to more later in the show.
There's plenty of vengeance to come. Will's got a whole episode to make up.
But let me tell you what, cursing was not the only problem with last week's show.
This is true. We want to apologize. I know last week at the top of the show we mentioned that we ironed out a lot of the kinks. Well, I want to apologize for the huge fucking kink that was the audio issues. We know what caused it, and the responsible parties have been shot and their families exiled to labor camps.
I had to kill 18 people this week.
It was awful.
Do you know how long it takes to dispose of 18 bodies?
You know how deep a mass grave has to be? Fucking deep. Honestly, though, we apologize. It shan't happen again. Once again, we know what happened. If it was absolutely distracting and caused a situation where you could not at all listen to the episode, as we always say, we'll refund your fucking money.
Exactly.
But other than the audio issues, it was a pretty good episode.
We were good. Our guest was good.
It was good. Just couldn't hear him half the time. But once again, we're back on track, and you know, we're 21 now and moving strong.
And apologies to our guest, Daniel Zana. Check out his film, The Vinyl Frontier. We got a link on our Facebook page.
Yeah, you know what? As a courtesy to him, exactly, check out his film and make your apologies in the form of monetary remuneration. So... second bit of housekeeping. As of today, Apple has released a podcast app. This is specifically for iPads, newer generation iPad 2 and 3, and iPhone 4 and 4Ss. With this podcast app, it's like iTunes, but it will keep track of your podcast. It will automatically download new episodes. It'll keep you subscribed. It's a very easy, very succinct, straightforward way for you to listen to your favorite podcast, like the Will Sean Podcast. So if you have an iPhone, if you have a next-generation iPad, download the podcast app, make sure to subscribe to us, and stop complaining that you can't listen. Because Apple, Steve Jobs, his ghost, is making it easier than ever to listen to the Will Sean Podcast.
It was his dying wish, I believe,
it
that
was,
more people listen to our podcast.
I downloaded the app today, and it's phenomenal. It's really easy to use, very straightforward.
Look at this, and you understand technology, so I listen to you. Hey, who's our sponsor?
This week's episode is brought to you by Guano-based toothpaste. It will give you a smile that's batshit crazy. Guano toothpaste.
That's a high quality product. I brush my teeth with that before every date with a young lady.
And is that why you don't get a kiss at the end of the night?
That's why I get more than a kiss.
Really? She likes your batshit
breath? Yeah, I'm into some women who are into some upsetting things. Today on the show, we have so much to discuss. It's like a big packed show. We've got the new Aaron Sorkin show, The Newsroom, premiered last weekend. So we have that to talk about. Going to talk a little bit about Magic Mike, this new Soderbergh movie coming out. Very curious to hear what people's thoughts might be.
Amazing.
And we have I mentioned technology, and we have an enemy that I think technology is helping make worse. So we're gonna get to that a little bit later. But first and foremost, our guest this week has directed a terrific new film called Right Next Door, and he is Nicholas Brandt.
What's going on, gentlemen?
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Should we go with Nicholas or Nick?
You know me. You can call me Nick.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
You, though. Strangers listening, you can call me Nicholas.
Yeah, Will, you can call me Nick. Sean, you call me fucking Nicholas.
You call me Sir.
Call me Mr. Brand.
When my sister was pregnant with her first child, my father was going to be his first grandchild. He was trying to decide what he wanted to be called. Because you know what? I think I'm going to go with the Colonel. I want to be called the Colonel.
Sanders. It worked out well for him.
Occasionally, we still refer to my father as the Colonel, even though he has had nary a day of military service. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, I mentioned you have a brand new film, but before we get to that,
yes,
let's get a little bit of your origin story.
When a man loves a woman.
Yes. How did this go down?
In that special way.
Yeah. The night you were conceived.
I wasn't there per se, but I
you
heard
were there
it was
in
awesome.
Spirit.
I was there. Actually, while I was in the womb, my mom attended an Elvis concert. So technically, I attended an Elvis concert.
Ah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
When I was in the womb.
That's my origin story.
I don't think my parents did anything.
So Elvis is responsible for the success here.
Exactly.
But where did you? I mean, we're here in L.A. Obviously, you're going to make movies. You come to Los Angeles because where that you're not going to do it like in...
Mumbai.
Exactly. So so you come here. When did you come here? How long have you been here? Where you come from?
I come from Western New York, the Niagara Falls area.
Oh, really?
Great tourist attraction. I went to school at University of Rochester, studied film, which is a horrible, horrible waste of time for anybody listening.
I only have $8,000 left to pay on my student loans.
Congratulations. But study film, great school, came out here.
Do what I did, study art history and English literature. It'll serve you well.
Yeah, it's nice to have that piece of paper on the wall.
So finally you fled the frozen wastes of upstate New York?
Oh, it's great, because the wind will blow in both directions at the same time.
Excellent.
You could be walking, passing somebody on the street, and you're both getting the frosty wind in your face. So yeah, I came out here and tried my hand at everything. I started out PAing on independent movies for free. Like, my first day, I dug a ditch and blacked out somebody's legal documents.
Are you sure you were working for the mafia?
I'm not entirely sure who I may have been
working
for.
Unclear.
Who I may or may not have been working for. Notch, notch, wink, wink, say no more. And then I made my way into PAing on features, and then I've done pretty much everything you can do on a movie. I've written or co-written three that got made, and this last one I co-wrote and co-directed with my friend Lisa Hamill.
So you said you've written some stuff that's gotten made.
Yes.
Previous to this. Tell us something about that.
Well, the first movie was a low-budget horror movie called Hollywood Kills.
Okay.
And if anybody out there is listening, you should contact me for the drinking game rules, because I really don't want anybody watching that movie without playing the drinking game. And then the second one...
Well, wait, was that something... So you wrote that, and then it
I
would...
Some people came up to me, they said, hey, Nick, can you write a script in a week? And I said, yes.
That alone was a drinking game.
That should have been, yeah.
But you know what?
It was a drinking game. It was mostly Mountain Dew.
When you said that, because I've gotten some notes or contact by people in the past, and they tell you to do things like, can you write 18 scripts in 24 hours? And you just say yes.
Absolutely.
You always say, I could do this, and then you kill yourself to get it done.
Absolutely, because opportunity knocks a couple times. Most of the time, you're going to have to make your own opportunity. If somebody comes to you with an opportunity, you have to seize that shit. I swore. Yay. My first swear on the internet.
You're assuming this is going online. The episode's not finished yet.
Damn it! So Hollywood Kills.
Hollywood Kills. And then the second one I co-wrote with a friend, John Severin. It's called The Secret Lives of Dorks.
Okay.
And that's still in post-production.
What's that one about?
It's a high school geek romantic love story thing.
Okay.
A dork-rantic comedy?
Dork-rantic comedy.
I
like that.
It doesn't work as well as it did in my head.
Oh, no, I like it a lot. Okay. And if I was making the poster, I would put that on there, sir.
Was this something that, again, you were approached to write, or was this something that you guys had come up with and you found an interested party?
We found an interested party, and then he found another interested party, and then they made it.
Okay, nice.
A Saudi prince to pay for it all.
I don't know where these things come from.
I don't ask. I learned that.
No, you said this is in post. Is this something we might be seeing soon? Is
Hopefully.
This something?
I'm kind of out of that process. Okay. So
you're the writer.
I'm the writer.
It's not like
yeah.
you matter.
Yeah, it's not like it's TV where the writer is king. In film, the writer is the writer.
Listen, word boy, why don't you go write more of your words?
Yeah, go back over there. And then why do you think I wanted to direct?
Which brings us to... Right Next Door.
Exactly.
Now, this is a... you screened it for me and Sean the other night, and I got to admit, I knew very little going in.
I knew nothing. I sat down and go, what's this movie about? Let's sit
Up. And I wasn't even sure that it was, like, a thriller. Yeah. And it's very... It's starts off kind of like, you know, you don't know where this is going to go. Is this going to be funny?
No, the opening shot,
is a girl crying
hysterically, and as soon as I saw that, I go, yeah, this ain't a romantic comedy.
We wanted to set the tone, and that's why we chose to do that.
That would be a good opening for a romantic comedy, though.
That would be a good idea.
A girl in a terrified...
Dibs. I call dibs. You heard it, Internet, yes. If this makes it to the podcast.
here's what's funny about it, though. I think the movie lulled me in. Like, I'm watching these early scenes... And it was funny, and it was a little lighter, and then all of a sudden it turns, and it goes back to that tone of that girl screaming. Why don't you tell us a little bit of what the movie's
about? For all the people out here listening who haven't yet had a chance to watch the movie.
Oh, man, I haven't practiced my pitch in a while, but basically
Sean could explain it if you want.
It's about a babysitter who's babysitting for a family for the first time. It's an overnight assignment. They're new to her, she's new to them, and she thinks the family's pretty cool until shit goes wrong, and then she has to worry if she's protecting the family or protecting herself, or, you know. I like people going in a little dark,
because
I like to have that thriller kind of sprung on them,
especially for a suspense film.
Yeah,
well, it's got a bit of a slow burn. It takes a little while till you get to the thriller with a capital T element. The whole first act, it's a little bit of a slow burn and a build up, and you don't even know, without telling too much, the way it's structured, it's a little weird, a little creepy, but you don't know where this is going to go
necessarily.
There's
something off. You know there's something off. Like I said, it lulls you, and there's something off about the family.
Oh, yeah.
And we slowly start to see it.
We really lucked out with performances, and I think that's key. My co-writer, co-director, Lisa Hamill, is a casting director, so we got some great people attached. But we always
said... What are
some of the names? Well, you know, the parents are played by Linda Hamilton and Ted McGinley.
Let's start with that.
Okay.
Linda Hamilton, fucking Sarah Connor.
I know.
It's in your movie. That's got to be a thrill.
To come out of the box and be directing Sarah Connor was... It's intimidating until you realize you're on a deadline. You have to make... There's no time to be a fanboy.
Right.
You have to get your hands dirty immediately.
It's professional. We're going to do this. This is how we're going to block it. Oh, yeah. You just have to jump in there.
Yeah. And then after the fact, at the end of the day, you're like, oh my gosh, I totally directed Linda Hamilton.
Whenever you just think of her in your head, you just think that scene in Terminator 2 when you first see her.
Yes. She's doing the pull-ups.
Mm. So that was a great casting girl.
And they were so sweet, too.
And Ted McGinley.
McGinley,
who... I thought he was fantastic casting because it kind of played against his, you know, you've seen him in a lot of sitcoms.
Absolutely.
And you've seen him be, like, part of a family in a sitcom and stuff like that. So it played a little bit, it added something to it.
He's the quintessential all-American guy. From his youthful roles through today, just quintessentially all-American. And it was a perfect opportunity for us to exploit that. And then the kids were great. We had Holly Hirsch as the babysitter. We had Jeremy Dozier as the older brother, Jack. We had Austin Rogers as Tyler, the middle brother.
I enjoyed him a lot in it.
Well, he's kind of like you.
Oh, a little pervy.
He's a little pervert. And then Elsie Fisher as the youngest, Grace.
Let's talk about that. Directing children. How old was the Elsie Fisher? How old was she?
I believe she was 10. And she's a professional.
Yeah.
She's a voice, one of the lead voices in Despicable Me. So it wasn't... She'd been to the rodeo more than we had. She was showing you how to do things. Well, we actually had her.
She was hazing you.
We gave her a little flip cam, and we had her do an EPK, the Elsie Press Kit. So she was interviewing people on the set, our cast, our crew,
doing her
own little thing. I will work for her someday. She will run Hollywood.
It's a great way to keep a kid busy, too, when you're trying to get other stuff done so they don't just
she was a dream.
Spin their wheels.
An absolute... Like, I mean, we really lucked out in everybody who was in this movie. Also, Andrew James Allen as Kansas... The boyfriend with the name of a state.
Getting back to working with kids, it's so great to have a professional kid. I remember in my thesis film in college, I used my like 6-year-old, 7-year-old cousin because I needed a kid, and I'm like, I'll just use him, and he had no lines, but he was great when I was actually like directing him. But in between time, he was like running around the set doing whippets or something. He didn't know it was a can of whipped cream, and he was trying to get whipped cream, but instead he was unknowingly doing whippets, and he went insane. It was insanity.
It's worth it to hire professionals because it saves you time. It saved you whipped cream cans. It works across the board.
And she was excellent, too.
Why did you have whipped cream cans on your set?
Yeah, that seems like a bad idea, especially with kids.
What kind of craft services table were you running with?
What kind of
Sunday
responsible
bar?
Adult are
we
you?
We were shooting in someone's home, and they had it in their fridge.
So your little thieving cousin is raiding the fridge in this home you're using as a set.
Pretty much. Okay. Well, speaking of homes, this is pretty much a contained thriller. Well, it takes place in a house, and mostly just one room, I would say, a great deal of it. Now, when you were writing this, was that a conscious decision for budgetary reasons? Like, you know, if I'm going to make a film, it's going to cost a lot, so if we could limit the locations.
That was actually a very big part of the creative process. We wanted to limit the number of locations. Yep. We wanted to limit the number of cast. Obviously, with a budget, you can only shoot a certain number of days, so you have to maximize what you're going to do. You can't have company moves. So we spent...
So no fantasy cutaways to China.
Yeah, no, not
so much. We
gotta
go spend 2 days there for a 6-second scene.
There's a whole dream sequence takes place on the Great Wall.
We need verisimilitude. This needs to be on the Great Wall. Yeah.
Yeah. A medium wall will not suffice.
Reminds me of the scene in the otherwise shitty Woody Allen movie, the one where he's Hollywood ending.
Oh yeah.
Where they're in Central Park and he's with his whole team and he's like, "This isn't right. We gotta build this whole thing in a soundstage." Wait, you wanna build all of Central Park? We need to build all of Central Park in a soundstage. Yes. So going back to your point,
he built a house.
Well, yeah, that house
that
doesn't.
That was a shitty movie.
Oh, yeah.
The Woody Allen. Yeah.
No, we built a house.
We built a house.
Yeah.
The Dream House, Cider House House. What was that movie? With Anakin Skywalker and Kevin Klein.
Life as a house.
Oh, fuck that movie. Yeah, no. Moving on, continue.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, we definitely built a bathroom. That's that might be the new title. Thanks, guys.
We built a bathroom.
I know, what do you think? That's right next door, we built a bathroom.
That's going to be the behind-the-scenes book.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The tell-all.
The Burden of Dreams. That's going to be Elsie's little documentary, Built a Bathroom.
It'll be like the Man of La Mancha for our movie.
Yes. Well, I have a question, actually. So you co-directed this film.
Yes.
How does that division of labor work?
We actually, from the very beginnings of introducing ourselves to the major cast and crew at the table read, said, if you ask one of us a question, you're asking both of us a question. We were so much on the same page. We wrote it together. We conceived the idea. We executed it. We were absolutely 100% on the same page throughout. I could read her mind by the end.
Was there any circumstances where you felt like an actor or a crew member was trying to play mommy against daddy?
No, because we really had good communication skills. And I think regardless of position, you have to have that.
Yeah.
And like there was maybe one time where we had to worry about us, and that's because both of us had to rush off set because she had accidentally eaten nuts and... I feared she was going to die.
Oh. Well, in that case.
Yeah.
Well, that's when you poisoned her so you can have complete control for a few hours.
And that's why I like to tell the story that I saved her life, because that way you know that we were on the same page, we were on the same team.
Nobody wanted anyone dead.
And
nobody
LC wanted anybody now dead. Is directing the film.
Unlike those Coen brothers who are constantly trying to murder each other.
It's true. Yeah. Every movie.
That would be a good movie. Two co-directors trying to murder each other throughout the process.
That's for the DGA credit.
Where they start out best of friends. We're going to make a movie.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the movie, it's just this dark comedy of them on the set just trying to create increasingly elaborate setups to try and kill the other person.
Call it Mousetrap. See, that way we can brand it with
all right,
that
Internet,
game,
you better not steal this fucking idea.
That game, and it'd be the new Battleship.
You know what? It's great that you found someone.
Four directors.
Oh, yes. I like it.
It's great that you found someone that you could have that relationship with, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, that's, you don't know. Yeah. And I was actually, because I was thinking that maybe someone was more tech and someone was more with the actors, but everything the same.
Oddly enough, no. It was 100% unity. Neither one of us spent time specific with tech or cast. We were just doing it 100% together.
Speaking as someone who's involved in a creative partnership, let me tell you, sometimes there's some dead weight. I'm just saying.
Sean's been carrying me since episode one. I know it.
Only one person here. I'm doing both voices.
Oh, is that why he wants you to lose weight?
Yeah, maybe. He wants me to get thinner. Before we move on to the topics, well, first of all, actually, real quick, the film, we really enjoyed it. Now, when is the world going to be able to see
it? Right now we're checking out distribution avenues because we literally just finished it last month. So you guys were pretty much the first non-cast members to see this film. Mm-hmm. So,
that's
you're fancy
thrilling.
Like that. So We're working on those avenues, and I think we should have that decided in the very near future.
Somehow, Ain't It Cool already has a review up.
Oh,
and
damn you, Harry Knowles.
I was actually...
Wait, is it positive?
Does
it give me three sandwiches?
I didn't read it.
Two pizzas? Couple chicken wings.
When you screened it for us, I actually bootlegged the copy. I was actually videotaping.
Sitting there in the court.
Damn you, Willie.
Is there some place that they could go check out to get updates on it, see where it's going?
We do have a Twitter for @RightNextDoor, and we also have a Facebook page up for it. So the Twitter amuses me to no end because we were tweeting random quotes from the set, and it's actually pretty funny, I hope, to other people, but it's very funny to me. So
we'll have those links up on the Facebook
and
page.
And we've liked the movie, so you can go to our page and get the info on their page, and then you can just follow everybody. The one thing I wanted to bring up real quick, that you also directed a web series that went up this past week from a former guest, Tanya Yang, in episode 11.
Wow.
How much you do about girls.
Yeah. And you worked hard on that, too. And
yeah.
That's something. That,
no,
that,
and we've got episodes 1 and 2 went up this week. I think we're going to try to post 2 a week, and I think people
will
enjoy it.
Yeah, if you haven't watched it yet, we posted up the links. It's very funny. Tanya is entertaining as fuck. I know her personally, and I still found myself laughing out loud watching her just be ridiculous. It's very funny, and the tone is so different than the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, it's just night and day, and she's really, seriously, click on the links, check it out. It's very, very funny.
Nick Brandy could direct comedy, he could direct thrillers, he could do it all. And he's going to stick around for the topics now.
Next, yeah.
So this week.
Yeah.
New Aaron Sorkin show premiered on HBO, The Newsroom. And this is, you know, that Aaron Sorkin touch on, well, the news. With this, I guess, is he a Keith Olbermann-esque anchor? Is he turning into that?
I don't even know where... For those of you who don't know, very quickly, Aaron Sorkin, in case you don't know, he is the writer and creative mind behind such shows as The West Wing, Sports Night, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, and the movies A Few Good Men,
Social Network,
American President, Moneyball, Charlie Wilson's War, and now he's got a new show, The Newsroom.
And it did great in the ratings, and I watched it. And I liked it, but I'm worried. Because it is, you know, and I knew this going in, it would be a little self-righteous, as I think Aaron Sorkin stuff can often be. But I enjoyed the pilot, but what worries me is I enjoyed the pilot to Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, and I see a lot of similarities, including both started with someone going on a rant about television and thus the world, basically. And that pilot was great, and then that show got really self-righteous, but it was about, like, an SNL-type show, and I felt like maybe it shouldn't be so self-righteous.
Until it fell off a fucking cliff.
Yeah, yeah. And where Newsroom, since at least it's about the news and more in tune to the world, maybe the self-righteousness will work?
No. So halfway through the pilot, the main character, the Jeff Daniels character, is described as the Jay Leno of the news. He doesn't offend anyone. He goes right down the middle. No one can peg him on any political affiliation. The opening scene, he goes off on a rant about why America is no longer great, but can be. He comes back after a three-week hiatus to the newsroom to find out that his boss, Sam Waterston, has hired as his new executive producer his former girlfriend, Emily Mortimer, who has spent the last 3 years covering the war in Afghanistan.
Yes.
And they have a lot of baggage and a lot of history, and he's resistant to the fact of having her as executive producer. All this is going on, all these character dynamics are playing out. Then they get a news flash. Something is happening. And a date crawls across the screen. It's April 20th, 2010, and we realize, this episode is going to be about the Deep Horizon BP oil spill.
Yeah.
So essentially what Aaron Sorkin is doing is he has created a television show where he can rewrite recent history and give all the perspective and all of the rant and all of the opinion that we should and the conversation we should have been having at the time in retrospect. It's essentially drama through virtue of hindsight, and it's going to bite him in the ass.
Counterpoint.
Well, here's the thing. I loved Sports Night. Sports Night is one of my favorite shows of all time.
One of the most underrated shows.
Absolutely. Once they lost the laugh track, it was probably one of the best shows I've ever seen. This is another version of that. You've got the elder statesman and the Robert Guillaume, now Sam Waterston.
Yeah.
You have the female producer and the male anchor and the love
like
dynamic
an Anchorman
between them.
Like Veronica, what the hell's her name?
Veronica Corningstone.
Yes.
No, she was a co-anchor. She wasn't a producer.
Whatever.
See, huge difference there. But I love when Sorkin works best for me. It's not about being self-righteous. It's not about the issues. It's about the relationships. And I
Here's
think he does really well with those. And I like seeing the tension and how that develops.
Here's
Sean.
Where I'm from. Okay. Sports Night, he was reporting there were fictional sports. First of all, it's half hour. Big
yeah.
difference. Dealing with fictional sports outcomes and sports teams, and there was just kind of a created world there. In Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, one of the issues was that it was supposed to take place behind the scenes of an SNL-type show, and Aaron Sorkin, in all of his infinite wisdom, decided that he was going to write... In 30 Rock, they do a good job of not actually showing you the comedy sketches.
Just little brief snippets.
Brief snippets.
Yeah.
Aaron Sorkin decided he was going to write the comedy snippets. He's not a comedy writer, so he wrote these deeply earnest, awful comedy segments.
Okay.
But now he gets to correct all of those wrongs by allowing himself to play in the sandbox of recent history. Now he's got meaty shit that he can dig his teeth into.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with that?
Now, here's what's wrong with that. Because there's the dichotomy between the editorializing instinct that he has, what he wants to do, and it almost feels like he unfortunately needs to wrap this up in a fictional dramatic framework in that I guess I have to have characters, and I guess these characters have to have relationships, and let's throw in a love triangle, and I feel like you're gonna, as the show progresses, you're gonna have an increasing divergence between, you know, next week apparently the episode's gonna be about the Arizona law where they're requiring ID, you know,
the immigration
law, so he's gonna be able to go off and get himself off on talking about news
off.
And the issues, and then you're going to have this divergence between what is going to, in my prediction, become increasingly less and less important relationships amongst the characters that will further serve as just almost a distraction to what Sorkin really wants to do, which is recontextualize the news.
I disagree. I think that it's going to be quite the opposite. I think that the relationships will inform how he deals with the news.
Well, you know what? It this whole... And I knew going into the show that they were going to be dealing with old news stories. I had read that somewhere. And I think... Well, look, to be fair, we don't know how it's going to play out. But I do think, Sean, you're right. It could bite him in the ass, but I don't think for the reasons that you're saying. I think I'm more concerned about... Let's say they created fictional news stories that we don't know the outcomes of in reality.
Well, like
in
the West Wing, they created a fictional...
Yeah, it might create some more drama. Like, I know Gabby Giffords is going to get shot, and I know exactly how that story plays out. When they're looking over the wire, I know that she's going to pull through and she's going to live.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe there's more drama in not knowing the outcome to these news stories.
Well, think about in West Wing, the plot line where Bartlett's running for president, all of a sudden... Holy shit, there's a Republican surge in California. What if California votes Republican? That completely throws off the dynamics, and that creates drama. Once again, you're dealing in an alternate universe.
Yeah.
But
let me ask you this. Are you going to keep watching?
Only for Allison Pill, who I think is adorable.
Oh, she's adorable and talented.
Yes.
Honestly, the whole cast is talented.
Did you catch the Jesse Eisenberg cameo?
No.
He was the voice of the minerals... He was, because the director of the episode, Greg Matola, had directed, or Matola, directed Superbad and Adventureland.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was like, I know, it's Jesse Eisenberg, who also starred in The Social Network.
Let me say this also about this show. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I will watch it again and continue to watch it. However, the opening credits sequence was awful.
A friend of mine tweeted, this credits sequence looks like it was made by people that haven't watched television news in the last 5 years.
That was actually the thing I liked least. It was the most self-important part of the show.
Yeah.
It sets a bad tone.
It does.
That way.
Yeah.
Okay, well, moving on.
So we got some meat here this week.
We do
stuff
have some
to give
meat
to
here.
We're banking up for last
I want to... We're gonna have a time crunch today. Well, we might go over.
Time Captain Crunch?
We,
Magic Mike.
I was actually going to go somewhere else, but we'll go with Magic Mike now. Magic Mike is this movie coming out this weekend about male strippers, and it's like loosely based on Channing Tatum's life. And
it really is?
Loosely,
yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't know
he was
know
a male
that
stripper before he...
It shows in his acting.
I think he's a good actor.
He's getting better.
He is getting better, because 21 Jump Street was phenomenal.
And this movie...
Wait till you see what he does in G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Oh. You heard the story behind that, right?
Oscars. Yeah,
we talked about it on the podcast. Right. We talked about it on an early episode. But And if you want to know that story, go back and listen to every episode, because we're not going to tell you. But
Easter egg.
Magic Mike is about the world of male strippers. And I know a lot of women who actually are legit. They're like, we're all going to get together. We're going to see Magic Mike. We're going to see Magic Mike. And the three of us are men, but we're also cinephiles. And Steven Soderbergh directed this movie, and he is an artiste.
I guess.
Well, Steven Soderbergh, the director of such classics as Limey Bubble, Full Frontal. Am I missing any here?
Yeah, I like the ones you're choosing. And Limey is a great film.
Limey
is good. Out of Sight, The Ocean Eleven movie, Aaron Brockovich, Traffic.
Contagion.
This year already, Haywire.
This is the third movie this year.
Does he sleep?
No, he just makes movies.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are we going to see this movie?
Of course.
I mean, okay.
Well, it's getting very good reviews, and they're saying that the movie has a very Robert Altman feel to it, the way that he approaches this world, where he just lets conversation sort of happen. It looks like it has a sense of humor, a point of view, and it's fun, whatever. You know, are you threatened by watching a bunch of guys dance?
No, not at all. Hey, I was at Brokeback Mountain opening day, front row.
Front row?
Yeah, I was. I showed up. That was the only seats left. Yeah. So I'm there with, it's not that, but it does seem like, yeah, exactly. if you didn't hear it, Nick spit into his hand.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
But, I mean, no, I'm not threatened, but I mean, it is a very...
It's going to be a hard sell for men.
Exactly, and I guess that's why I bring it up, because it is a hard sell to get guys to go see
really
a movie about.
A really hard sell.
Oh.
And I think I bring it more up in that general, not that it bothered, please, I went to go see Short Bus. Now I'm overcompensating. I went to see Short Bus in the theater. I was
that
watching...
That movie was chock full of dicks. Wall-to-wall
dick.
Cocks.
So
of
I
dick.
Think we're learning something. I think you actually like seeing a movie with full frontal male nudity.
Nick, will you go see Magic Mike with
me? I'm on the fence.
Okay.
If they could CG Chris Farley doing the Chippendales routine, I'd be 100% in.
So you're going to see it.
But they can't, so I'm at about 70%.
Come on, you, me, Sean, Joe Mangiello's penis.
Maybe a matinee. I don't want to play full retail price for this movie.
At the sketchy theater off the Valley Plaza, the $1, the $1.50 screening. We'll go to that one.
No, let me ask you this, because I think I will end up seeing it as well. But are you going to see it opening week? Are you going to see it with the screaming women who think they're seeing like a... Because, I mean, there are women, I've heard them, talk about like, oh, the planet Magic Mike, oh.
You know, if you are a single guy, which I am not, so this does not apply to me, but if you are a single guy, that is the idea. You go there. You go there opening weekend. The screaming women are going to be looking for men afterwards.
They're
going to
get all hot and
they're
bothered,
be so hot and bothered.
By Channing Tatum, and then they're going to have no choice but to fuck me.
Exactly.
Will Link.
Plan sounds like it's going to backfire spectacularly.
No. It's going to front fire enormously.
Magic Mike and Magic Cake. Sorry, I said that.
Hey, you said it. You can say it.
I can say it. None of you. Mouth shut.
How do you know we can't say it?
I mean, physically, you can make the sound.
Right. So me and Sean are going to go see Magic Mike, and we're going to get laid. This is great.
You should report back.
This will be continued.
We're going to end up in some horrible situation. We're going to be running some train on some 40-year-old housewife with, like, a cesarean scar. It's going to be bad.
Oh, my God.
Wow, running train?
Oh, my God.
Really?
So, are we still going to the Twilight Midnight screening?
Yeah, we're going to do that, then.
This is how Will and I meet women. We go to these movies at the midnight screening. And,
I don't know if you're going to meet women.
More like
Twilight.
Girls.
Yeah, you're going to meet girls. You might meet women at Magic Mike, though.
Real women.
Depends what theater
Real
we go
women.
To.
Yeah.
I wanted to
have curves.
Go to the Magic Johnson Theater.
I hadn't mentioned it in the intro, but I wanted to bring up you're a comic book guy, Nick.
I am. I actually edit a comic book for Image called Little Depressed Boy.
Look at that.
Yeah.
What don't you do?
Windows.
Shave apparently.
Dishes. Oh, making fun of the beard over there.
Hey, I just shaved my beard off today. I'm a beard man.
Yeah.
You're a beard.
man. Oh, new movie title.
So anyway,
you're a beard man. Yeah.
We're having too much fun in this episode. Watchmen, one of the great graphic novels of all time.
One of the great literary works. It made the top 100 literary works of all, like, American literature.
Yeah.
And it's one.
Oh, doubter.
Well, I like Watchmen. I just don't think it's on the top 100.
It's something that I've reread multiple times, and I got to admit, I shamefully don't reread a lot of stuff. And they are coming out now, or they've already come out.
They're coming out already, yeah.
Before Watchmen.
Yes.
Which is a prequel comic, or a series of prequel comics, with no involvement from the creators of Watchmen, David Gibbons and Alan Moore. Is this sacrilege? As a comic fan, is this sacrilege to you?
Well, I'm of a couple minds on this. Alan Moore, I don't know that he should be the person defending creator rights, because some of his other works, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, he's basically taking other people's characters and doing what he wants with them. And the most recent one, it made the news recently that the Antichrist is going to be basically Harry Potter.
In his newest comic book.
In his newest, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I think 90s.
Oh, he's still doing that?
Yeah, it's a different form of that. So they're literally characters that were written by somebody else. So I don't know that he should necessarily be coming against somebody doing something with other people's characters. Also, for creative rights, from that standpoint, he has his name removed from the Watchmen movie, from League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie. That sets a weird precedent. Even if you don't like what they do with your material, you still want your name attached to it so people can go back.
He's more than happy to take their check and option the material. He's a miserable human being.
He's a beard. He's got a huge beard.
He does have a huge beard. Yeah. He makes our beard look like like trimmed pubes.
But
he is a Gandalf.
Well, are you going to read this before Watchmen?
Yeah, I mean, they've got some great creators attached to it. Darwin Cook, especially.
Carrot Top? No, Carrot Top. Did I misread that?
What?
No Gallagher either? I thought they were involved with this.
The shock top has gone to his head.
Wow, so...
But yeah, I mean, here's the thing. There's a lot of stories that can be told. I understand that he's upset, and I think he's got a ground to stand on, but probably not as firm as some other people might be if he didn't play in other people's sandboxes.
Who owns the character?
I guess DC, right?
That's the problem, and that's always been a problem in comic books, is the creator rights from Superman on. They're still fighting over Superman.
You're right. I would have a problem if Alan Moore, wanted to be involved and they wouldn't let him or something like that, because then... I mean, it's tough because this Before Watchmen has a lot to live up to that it won't live up to.
Well, and also it's coming in the wake of the New 52 for DC. They're trying to, re-energize the brand. It's definitely, it's got high expectations and it's got to do well.
I honestly don't pick up a lot of comics, but I think
very
I may
heavy.
Look into that. I may look in...
His new exercise routine, picking up comics.
I'm going to pick up comics. I'm going to look into this before watching. I saw a thing where it had the comedian, killed Marilyn Monroe or something like that. Yeah, so
spoiler alert.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, I read it in Entertainment Weekly.
Well, fuck them.
Okay, yeah, no, I wanted to get your take on that because it is interesting.
It's obviously, there's definitely a lot. I don't think it's a black and white issue kind of thing. I think you can take
a stand. No, it's a color comic.
Yes.
You're like Shecky Sean over here.
You need
here.
A horn. To...
Is it that bad? I'm not overly borscht belty today. Hey, so this woman, she wants me to take her out. What do I need to take her out for? She wants to go out, she can go out. I don't need to go out with her.
So,
wow.
So, let me say something. Moving on. Assholes are videotaping everything. Wherever you go. People are recording, oh, look, my friend's taking a shit. Oh, I gotta put that on YouTube. And, I mean, this wasn't this way. I don't think, when I see something go down, I don't think to record it personally. I just think to look at it or, maybe sometimes even get involved.
Get involved.
And recently there was a story here in Los Angeles on the I-5. A man named Jerry Patterson cut off this car full of these three guys. And whether it was an accident or not, either way, what ended up happening shouldn't have happened. These guys ended up getting in front of him. They pulled over, and right on the freeway, in traffic, they all got out of their cars, and they proceeded to get into a fight. But the problem was, this Jerry Patterson, who seemed like a tough guy, he started taking on one guy and clearly had him. And then these other two guys jump in. So it's 3-on-1, and they beat the shit out of him. I mean, he was down on the ground. And, okay, fine. You got him down on the ground, leave him. No, they started kicking him in the fucking head.
Yeah, that's hockey rules. When they're down on the ice, the refs pull them apart, it's fight over.
It's the laws of fighting, of decent fighting.
Yes.
And The thing about this, the reason we all know about it, is because someone pulled over and proceeded to videotape this entire event. They did not call the police.
Well, they probably were using their phone. They couldn't call the police.
Yeah, they did not yell anything like, hey, stop that guy, or get involved themselves. And I could see being leery on getting involved themselves. But even afterwards, they run up to him with the camera. And they're like, oh, man, are you okay? Like, with the camera over him, he's barely moving on the ground. He's been kicked in the head.
They're doing the Ellie press kit.
And let me tell you what. You... guy with the cell phone who is videotaping people maybe dying and doing nothing. You are the enemy of the podcast because you're going to sit by and record this so you could jerk off to it later instead of interfere. Someday someone's going to be bashing my head in with a bat and you're just going to be like, well, I'd call him, but I got to get this on videotape. Fuck you. People do this. And nobody does anything about anything anymore. Like, remember last year at Dodger Stadium, there was that Giants fan who...
Not Brian Shaw. He was the assistant coach for the Lakers. Brandon Shaw. Something. Yeah, continue.
A man from San Francisco. And these guys beat the hell out of him in the parking lot. This is the parking lot after a Dodger game. There are people around. Now, look, I could see, you know... You mean not one of these people... was like, maybe I should help this guy. Maybe I should pull... Because even if you get involved, that might stall it long enough for the cops to get there. You could save someone. Like, everybody's a bunch of fucking pussies.
Right, but cooler heads could prevail. Maybe if you take them out of that moment where they're in ragefulness, whatever's going through their head, why they have to kick somebody's ass, maybe they'll be like, oh, whoa, I'm a human being. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this to another person.
I feel like assholes are always going to be assholes, and once they get their blood up, they're just going to be...
But nevertheless, shouldn't people got to do something?
I think we're so used to watching things. Like, reality television has desensitized us to reality.
Remember Kitty Genovese? That was that girl in New York in the 60s where they say she got attacked and killed and 38 people. No one did anything. Boondock Saints uses that as their plot point in the beginning.
Well, let me ask you this. At least they weren't videotaping.
No, they were just ignoring. Right. But now they're watching
technology
and videotaping.
Will upgrade, you know?
So now it's like blatant ignoring.
So we need robot policemen.
Here's the thing. The guy who filmed that, he probably doesn't think he was an asshole. He probably thinks, well, you know, I videotaped. I got their license plate number on video. Like, I'm a hero. No, you're not. If you were a hero, you would have, like, at least yelled, I'm calling the cops. And maybe these guys would... That's all he had to do.
Yeah, he didn't even have to actually call the cops. All he had to say is, I'm calling the cops.
Yeah, and it might have been enough to get those guys to run off. I mean, what has happened that people will videotape things instead of helping their fellow man? And look, I mean, I'd like to think that all of us... would get involved and help somebody, but I certainly wouldn't be videotaping. I certainly wouldn't be a gawker. And Sean is videotaping me on this rant, and I do not appreciate it. Why don't you get involved with the rant?
Stop the rant, man. Why are you stopping?
You know, it also, one of my favorite or least favorite stories about this is the David Packer, Dominique Dunn story. Do you remember this?
Dominic Dunn?
No, but the daughter of the author.
Okay.
And she was in Poltergeist, and she was murdered. She was murdered. Someone was stalking her, or some guy with some fan was obsessed with her, went to her house one day, and she was with the actor David Packer, who was in the miniseries V. He was played the Weasley kid in V, who betrays his, like, Jewish family.
I don't
family.
Know what you're talking about anymore.
Well, anyway, Dominic Dunn was supposed to be in it, and this guy comes to her house... And he, like, was obsessed with her, and he basically dragged her into the front yard and started strangling her to death. And David Packer was there watching this. He didn't, you know, try to save the young lady who was being murdered in the front yard. Instead, he was terrified, and he called his friend, and he said, If I die tonight, this is what happened.
How much cocaine were they on?
Yeah, that seems like it's not a natural reaction.
Fuck you, David Packer. Because Dominique Dunn is dead. She died.
I didn't know this.
She died. Griffin Dunn's sister, by the way.
Oh, wow.
And she died. She was murdered by this guy. He went to jail, obviously. He was fucking crazy. And this guy, this David Packer, he did nothing. And this has always pissed me off. Because, you know what? Get a fucking baseball. Get a frying pan from the kitchen.
Do
go
anything.
Out there. Do anything. If this guy had gotten involved and tried to rip this guy, even if the Dominic Dunn's killer beat the shit out of them, they'd probably still be alive because the cops would have gotten there by then.
All you have to do is yell, make noise,
so
help.
When we're leaving here tonight, my stalker starts strangling me outside of your apartment.
I'm going to run out and hit him with a fucking baseball bat.
I don't
want
to see footage of it.
But, you know, that's the other thing. I was a girl I was dating once. I would always, whenever she was over my apartment, I would always walk her to a car because that's what you do because she's a, you know, there's some, that'd be some chivalry left in the world. And she would always be like, well, what are you going to do if, like, people attack us? What are you going to do? And I'm like, well, I'll probably have to die defending you. But, I mean, that's the thing. You're going to, as guys, we're in these situations where we have to sometimes go into it knowing we're going to die.
I tell my friends on a regular basis, I go, if we get attacked, just so you know, I am pushing you into the assailant and I am running. You
the
are
female friends?
Oh, doesn't matter. Male, female, they are just grist for the violent mill.
I assumed you would push me towards the attacker, but I hope that maybe a nice young lady, an Andrea Marchant, you would defend her.
Sorry, Andrea.
You're going to die. You're going to die.
Will is a lover, not a fighter, and he was still
I'm defensive. A runner.
You're a runner.
I have been in so many situations where I thought someone was going to hit, like, a girl I knew, some guy, and they would have been within the right because she... I had a friend...
Oh, I don't know, man.
Okay, wait.
You're walking on some thin ice.
Bitch didn't know when to shut up.
No. I had a friend...
He had the moral high ground before the story.
Wait. I'm going to tell you... Let me explain. I had a friend, this girl, Larissa Pym. And she used to get drunk, and she used to punch random guys in the balls in bars.
That seems like a bad activity to participate in.
And she did this. Now she's lovely. She's got a child. She's a teacher. Everything's fine. But she would punch...
Spoilers.
She punched this guy in the balls, and the guy looked like he was going to hit her. No, I think this was just a quick reaction on his part. I've been punching the balls. Like, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to fight this guy. And he's going to beat the shit out of me because he's huge. And... it's because she punched him in the balls. That's what I meant by... not that she deserved it, but I definitely see that...
If only you could see the eye rolling that's going on right now.
You would have pushed her right back into the guy.
You know what? You reap what you sow. I think we got to...
well, speaking of great women, I just want to get to one thing. Today, right before we started recording, we learned that Nora Ephron died. Who was the... Oh, tell us who Nora Ephron was, Sean.
Nora Ephron was a writer. She had a thing for investigative journalists, apparently. She married Carl Bernstein of Woodward and Bernstein, the two guys who investigated the Watergate break-ins. And then
I like
she,
that this is the achievement you go
then
for.
Then she divorced him and married Nicholas Pileggi, who wrote Casino and Goodfellas and many books about the mafia.
And now what
she was a writer and an essayist in her own right. She wrote When Harry Met Sally.
She directed Sleepless in Seattle, You Got Mail, Julie and Julia, which was her last film.
Blue Heaven.
She wrote that.
Yeah.
Sean paying attention to her husband's, Nora Ephron was, she was a terrific writer. I mean, When Harry Met Sally is as good a script as you're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, that basically set the bar for romantic comedy. There's what happened before and what happened
there's
after.
Woody
and
Allen,
everything will be,
and
everyone
then there's
will
everything
be,
after that.
Everything will be considered, is it as good as When Harry Met Sally? And most things won't hit that bar.
So
most things aren't.
Nora Ephron, I will not have what you're having.
Which is?
Dead.
she was great.
This is how I do earnestness.
I enjoyed Julie and Julia, her last
I
film.
Did
I
as well.
It was terrific.
It was a charming movie. I loved Amy Adams and Meryl Streep. It was
Stanley Tucci.
It's a
absolutely.
It's a solid movie.
The greatest
did
thing about
her
writing.
Did you do What Women Want, or was that Nancy Meyers?
That was Nancy Meyers.
Fuck you, Nancy Meyers.
Yeah,
back to Nora Ephron.
But Nora Ephron, the great thing about her writing is the men and the women were fully formed. It wasn't like they were just
did
cookie
she
cutters.
She do Bewitched?
I think.
Hey, everybody gets one.
You get a pass. You do get a pass.
Is not good.
But you know what? She also was really important as far as female filmmakers and female writers in Hollywood. You know, we've talked a lot on the show about people recently that we've admired, like Lena Dunham and stuff like that. And you know, Nora Ephron was making hit movies like Sleepless in Seattle when it was when a lot of women weren't directing films. So.
Well played.
She left a high watermark, and I think she's an inspiration to writers of all genders.
And now I think it might be time to wrap up. Nick.
Will.
Thank you for coming on the show.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed your rant. I enjoyed watching the eye roll from the other end of the table.
This has been quite an episode. This has been a fun episode.
It was a good episode.
Everyone's going to hate it because we like it. Everyone's going to hate it.
We know how this works. The episode with the shitty audio quality was like, oh, it was good. It's like, no, you can hear shit.
This will have pristine sound and no one will care.
No, we're not. I don't want to write checks. Can't cash. Well,
so, okay. Do the thing where you plug things, Nick.
Go to our Twitter, at Right Next Door. Find us on Facebook, Right Next Door. Check out Lil Depressed Boy in comic book shops all over the place. You can get in single issues or trade paperbacks, which collect them all. And, yeah.
And how can they follow you on Twitter? You
can follow
Twitter?
Me on Twitter if you want to stalk me.
What would that be?
At Nicholas Brandt. It's pretty self-explanatory.
Spell it.
NicholasBrandt.
I was afraid maybe they would forget the D.
Oh, yeah. Silent D. It gets them every time.
Okay. Sean.
You can follow me at Twitter at TheSeanDavid. You can also buy and hopefully read my book, Triumvirs, Triumvirs, Three Tales at Amazon Kindle. That's where I can be found, and I may have some stuff coming up later this summer, but not going to make any promises.
No. That seemed more like a threat. You may have something this summer.
May, if I were you, I would look behind your back.
Sean may
you go
give
your house.
You something this summer. On it's called chlamydia.
It's hey. The...
He may push you into attackers.
You know, now they're finding strains of antibiotic-resistant gonorrhea.
Yeah, I know.
That's fucking terrifying.
This is why I gotta get... I gotta find...
Thankfully, it affects the women more than the men.
I gotta find...
Wow.
A...
Still single?
Oh, so single.
And you tried to turn it on me as if I was the misogynist in this episode. No.
You can't spell misogynist without miss.
You can follow me at The Real Will Link on Twitter, that would be. And
or to his apartment, if you want.
And you can listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific time on The PM Show with Larry Minetti on crntalk.com. I'll be reviewing movies. Maybe I'll be reviewing Magic Mike.
Who do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we have John Farrell, who is he's programmed for film festivals, including Scream Fest, which might be a good fit for Right Next Door, come to think of it.
I'll slide him some money.
A programmer then. We're going to talk about programming film festivals. We're also going to talk a lot of pop culture, as always. He's got a good head for it. And the week after that, we have an episode I'm very excited for. We are going to have a terrific actress, Lindsay Hollister. You've seen her on a lot of TV shows. You've seen her in the Get Smart movie. But she is very well known for a cult film called Blubberella, in which she played Blubberella, and we're excited to have her on. So it's going to be fun stuff. I can't wait to talk to her about working on that film.
And then, yeah, that's next 2 weeks. We got guest booked through the summer, and it's going to be a good summer, folks.
It's going to be, or it's going to be the summer.
It's going to be, the summer will happen. Just it will happen. The earth will turn, days will pass, summer will happen. Whether it be a good one or a bad one, that remains to be seen.
The Will Sean Podcast, no promises.
There we go. Nice.
And on that note,
we're finished.
We're finished.